So delighted to be sitting here with the newest subject of NTT 20 Meets, and it's Richie Wellens. Richie was a central midfield player, professional footballer who had a career spanning over 15 years, more than 700 first team appearances in English football, starting with one off the bench for United, Manchester United, which we'll touch on, to longer spells at Blackpool, Oldham, Doncaster, Leicester, Doncaster again, and then some shorter spells at the end of his career with Shrewsbury, Salford and Macclesfield. Moving into coaching and now management, Richie took over Oldham last season when bottom of League One, took 46 points from 36 games.
Yeah, there you go.
Before suffering relegation on final day, and having left Oldham at the end of the season, he's back in business with Swindon in November. So far, 26 points from 16 league games.
15 league games, because the first one I didn't really take the team.
Was that Carlisle?
That was Carlisle. Okay. I beat 4-0, so I'm trying to avoid that one. I just got here and just decided to go with a previous team from the previous week. Didn't have much time to work on anything tactical, so just said you won the week before against Woking in the cup. Same system, same personnel. And we played really well, to be honest. But yeah, it backfired in terms of the scoreline massively.
And Carlisle this season?
Yeah, they can win six on a bounce, and then they're going to lose 3 or 4 on a bounce. So, yeah, I think obviously John Sheridan is someone who I know well. I knew he'd do well at Carlisle, and I think since he'd moved on, the form has dipped a little bit.
Mm. We want to hear about your experiences as a player and as a manager. So we're going to start at the beginning, and Richie Wellens, the player. So central midfield player, but sometimes six, sometimes an eight, maybe once or twice even a 10.
Yeah, I think when I was growing up, I was an eight, up and down. And then I think when I signed for Steve McMahon at Blackpool, he wanted me going a little bit more forward, running ahead of the ball. 16 goals in 2 seasons under him. As I got later on in my career, sat mainly. And that was just some of the personnel that I played with. Mm. I played with the likes of Andy King, who was better than me at, you know, getting ahead of ball, getting the box. His finishing was very good. So you understand that if I played in a midfield two with Andy, then I would sit. I played at Doncaster in a three, where I had Brian Stock, who was a very good holding midfield player. He could shield the back four. And then myself and James Coppinger could go anywhere on the pitch, interchange. So experienced all parts of midfield, but he was mainly due to the personnel that I played with.
And if you were now going to the chairman or director of football, whoever it would be in this hypothetical scenario, and you wanted to flag up a player that you wanted to sign, that was Richie Wellens the player, how would you sell yourself?
They couldn't afford me. No chance. No, I'm only joking. Just someone who could, you know, when I was on my game and my 2 years at Doncaster, probably 2 years previous than that. I was playing really well in League One. I was League One team of the year for 3 years, three different clubs.
Yeah.
But never quite got, no one really took League One seriously. It was only that when I had the season in a championship with Doncaster that people started taking notice. Because it's like Ricky Lambert's a good example. He plays in League Two, he can't do it in League One. He steps up to League, can't do it in a championship, can't do it in the Premier League. So mm. you never get that opportunity unless you're thrust into it. And when I put into the championship for the first year, in terms of performance, it was easy. We dominated most games, we outpassed most teams. We just lacked that centre forward that could really, we finished mid-table.
I think even in promotion season with Donny, I think top scorer in the league was like 7 or 8,
yeah,
I think, was it?
We spread it around, yeah. But we would, if you went 1-0 up, you couldn't get the ball off us. Yeah. We'd frustrate you and then we'd try and pick you off towards the end. But really good footballers managed by a great manager, Sean O'Driscoll, who knew his football, knew how to get the best out of certain players. You know, and he was good for me. He was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to touch a bit more on specifics of that Doncaster side in a little bit. Let's start your early career coming through the ranks at Manchester United. Mm-hmm. Previous subject on this series, Paul Heckingbottom came through at the same club, and we've heard about his experiences. You came through sort of mid to late 90s, and you were part of the setup for quite a while. Spotted mm-hmm. when you were 10 years old and nine years old, and a local guy. So, can you try and remember what your mindset was coming through what was already a famous club, and then especially the academy with the guys a few years above you became even more famous?
I think, and a lot of players do it now, you take it for granted. I was playing at United, 9 years old, got to 14, got offered a 2 year schoolboy along with a 1 year apprenticeship, what it was back then, and then a 4 year professional contract. everything had come so easy. England under 16s, 17s, 18s, 19s, you just automatically think that it's just going to be, you know, you look at the Nicky Butt, Paul Scholes, Beckham, the Nevilles, Wes Brown, who's in my, you just think you're going to be the next one. He's just going to continue.
Was 4 years a lot then, or was that quite normal for a, you know, a talent, a 4 year professional?
No, yeah, it was usually a 1 or a 2 year. 4 years was myself, a couple of older players, John Curtis, Jonathan Macken, got it, and I think the only one in my year was Wes Brown. So it was a long, good contract at the time. Ryan Kidd, Nobby Styles, and then when I was full time, it was Neil Baylor, Eric Harrison, Jim Ryan. Brilliant coaches, brilliant, give you brilliant grounding. Technically, they got the best out of you playing with brilliant players every single day. So in terms of a football education, you can't ask for much more.
Yeah, and you made one appearance for the first team in the League Cup against Villa.
Mm.
It was a year, I think, that United opted out of the FA Cup, wasn't it? Having won the treble the year before. So they didn't play in the FA Cup that season.
Yeah, I think they had the Super Cup.
That's
the
right.
World Club Cup.
Yeah, the World Club Cup. Yeah, so they've opted out of the FA Cup. And then a team that was made up of a lot of youngsters that day. I think Luke Chadwick was in the side, John O'Shea as well.
Yeah.
Just a brief taste of professional football in the Manchester United kit.
Off the top of my head, I can only remember Mark Bosnich was in net. Ollie Solskjaer, Jordi Cruyff, Ronnie Johnson might have played.
Mm.
But it was a young team. I remember warming up and getting abused off the Aston Villa fans saying, "You've got school in the morning." Back then, you didn't have none of these fitted kits, what they have now. One size fits all, I'm afraid. And we were skinny young boys. We had an XL kit. I remember coming on, Mick Phelan said, "Go and warm up, you're coming on." And I was looking at the clock and I thought, "No, I'm not going to warm up. I'm ready. I'm fine. Stripped straight on." And I'd spent most of the time looking at the clock, thinking, "Please don't come down. Just try and stay still." I enjoyed it. I thought I'd done okay as well. And it was obviously a tough game because Villa then had a good team. Very physical, Colin Calderwood, Dion Dublin. So I'm really, you know, I had a lot of internationals in the team as well. So it was a tough experience because we had so many youngsters. It wasn't like he put in one or two. But Sir Alex had done that for years, put them in the league club and then see what youngsters could deal with it and then obviously see where you are.
When you left United, you joined Blackpool.
Mm.
What was the transition from, as you said, the unbelievable footballing education as a young, well, as an academy player and then a young professional, to then joining a, you know, football league club, dropping down a few tiers and basically becoming a proper professional player. Yeah. What do you remember about that?
I'd left Carrington and Old Trafford to go and play at Bloomfield Road, where I had two sides to the ground because it was in the middle of converting the stadium. And I was like, Jesus Christ, what have I done? Train at Squires Gate, where if you're doing crossing finishing, you need to aim for the halfway line for the ball to still be in play by the time it comes into the box. It was that windy. So the environment was obviously difficult. I remember me first rollicking off Steve McMahon. If you don't effing win second balls, then you're coming off. Phrases like hit the channel, turn them, second balls. And I honestly, and I said to him, I said, I don't know what second ball. He went, "That's when the ball goes there, you get tight to midfield." Anyway, I got the grips for it. It's probably about 6 months down the line. We was in League Two at that time, and I just looked around and said, how did they get here? If I don't do well here, then I'm finished. I'm finished as a football player. Within a year, I could be from Manchester United to be totally out of the game. So decided just to try and be more professional. I wasn't the most professional teenager. And then at the end of that season, we won promotion at the Millennium Stadium. So it was good first season.
How did the choice get made to move to Blackpool from United? Like, how does it work at that point where you realise you've got to leave United and you hadn't known anything else? Did you have an agent who found your club? Or
no, agents weren't necessarily about then. It was more, I just wanted to get out. I realised that I want the midfield that they had. I was never going to get in the first team. I just wanted to get out anywhere. I would have gone anywhere just to play first team football to find out what it was about. I made my debut at Stoke. Instead of playing at Lower Gig Lane, at Bury, that's where we played the reserve game, sometimes at Old Trafford, in front of hardly any people. I was playing at Britannia. It was for Blackpool, but playing for the 20,000, it was brilliant.
Mm.
All of a sudden I thought, you know what, I can actually make a career for myself here. Yeah, but that first season went well. We finished, we won the playoffs at the Millennium Stadium, and I thought, you know what, I can actually go on and have a good career for myself here.
Yeah, and you spent 5 years at Blackpool.
Yeah, too long.
Yeah.
I spent far too long. When I left United, they had a 50% sell-on. So it was in Carl Oyston's interest never to really let me go. So I was a little bit stupid. I nearly went to Bristol City, but I actually enjoyed it. We had a young squad. The average age, I think, it was only Colin Hendry, Simon Grayson, were the older pros at the time, Mike Milligan. But the rest of them was, I had a lot of 21, 22. So you can imagine, as soon as we finished the game, we was all out. We had a drink together. We enjoyed it. You know, but again, stayed there too long. Should have moved my career on quicker.
When you did move on, it was to Oldham.
Yeah.
2 seasons at Oldham. The second season, you lost in the playoff semi to Blackpool.
Mm.
Must have been just one of those sort of personal annoyances.
Yeah, well, it wasn't the easiest to take, if I'm being honest.
Was it a bit of controversy moving from Blackpool to Oldham? Or?
Well, it was more frustrating when the Blackpool fans were singing, you greedy so-and-so.
Yeah.
When I actually didn't move for that much money, you know what I mean? It was back then, your money wasn't great. It was the fact that Blackpool wanted Scott Vernon from Oldham. So they used, obviously, to waiver the 50%.
Sort of circumvent the
exactly, yeah.
The
so fee. Oldham was on my doorstep. I just had a baby boy. It was convenient. And it was at Oldham, it was the first ground that I ever played on Oldham. So, and I had an affinity with the club, so it made sense. And I went there, like I said, I was in league team of the year. We finished in the playoffs. Unfortunately, to get beat. I think my playoff game was the last game. I left after the playoff game.
Paul Warne was in that team as well, wasn't he? What do you remember of him as a player?
Warne just used to do my running. He was a brilliant athlete. When he won it back, he just used to give me the ball to supply some quality. But Warne was a good pro. Could finish. We had him, Andy Liddle, Sean Gregan, some good older professionals. But again, yeah, I should probably not have moved. That was a very sideways step. But again, didn't have anyone in my life to manage my career, no agents at the time. I've had loads of regrets in my career, but one of them was, you know, not moving up to the Championship was quicker than what I ended up getting there.
Yeah, in the end, and you kind of touched on it earlier, a lot of players have, and managers as well, have to win promotion with the team they're with in order to get to the level that they're pretty much suited to. And that's what happened with Doncaster. So you joined Donny. On paper, it looks like, anyway, just a great period for you as a player.
Yeah, I turned up. I'd obviously seen a stadium, realised that the club wanted to go places. John Ryan was a fantastic guy. He was a chairman of the club. And Sean O'Driscoll and Richard O'Kelly, real football people. Straight away, I felt a connection with them two. And after the first season, we beat Leeds at Wembley, 80,000. The style of football that we played, the way that we won promotion, we turned up at Wembley a couple of days before just to go and have a look at the stadium, because Sean didn't want us to turn up to Wembley and be a little bit, you know, surprised by the size of the stadium, be a little bit in awe of it. So we went to watch it, and Leeds were on the opposite half, look at us. And we just looked across, we made eye contact with a few of the Leeds, but we just knew we was going to beat them. We played them twice before. They actually beat us at the Keep Moat, and we beat them at Elland Road. But we knew in terms of football, they had some big names in the team, but we knew in terms of the football style that we played, they knew we was a better football team. And we used to have this feeling that you're going to win. So to go Doncaster after one season, Doncaster beating Leeds at Wembley in front of 80,000 people, it was a bit...
Yeah,
it was a brilliant story.
You're basically in the automatics for most of the second half of the season and fell out on final day. So that's kind of an interesting one, isn't it? Generally, psychologically, you'd think, oh, you know, they've kind of bottled that. Yeah. Maybe they won't fancy the playoffs. So
what happened was we actually took our going out gear because we thought, this is a given. We knew that if we won, Nottingham Forest couldn't overtake us. We went 1-0 down. Sean actually gave me a right rollicking at half time. I was injured. I needed a double hernia, but decided to try and delay it till the end of the season. And we pulled it back to 1-1. We got beat and we didn't go up. And I remember looking and thinking, I hope no one sees us take our going out gear off. Comes in a Monday and we had a meeting. And I stood up and said, listen, okay, it's a massive disappointment. Massive disappointment. But Swansea had just won promotion. They won the league. They won it at Brighton away. I think it was at Wigan. In front of 8,000. Okay, great, great for them. Brilliant event. Nottingham Forest had just won promotion. I think they won it at home at the City Ground, 25,000. I said, we've got a chance to get to Wembley. Says, fair enough. We've wasted that opportunity. Let's not dwell on it. let's look forward, we can win at Wembley. And we can look at Swansea and Nottingham Forest, and thanks for that, because we can win at Wembley in front of 8,000 people. And then the first leg we played away at Southend, I was injured. I just couldn't move. My double hernia was really taking effect. We drew 0-0. Then I played in a return leg. I had an injection before the game. We won 5-0. James Coppin just got a hat-trick. He was outstanding on a night. And then I had about 5 injections, one in each side, one up in my buttock, just to try and get through the game at Wembley. I wasn't missing it. And I lasted 70 minutes, and James Hayter scored the winner. But to play at Wembley is brilliant. It doesn't matter if it's the FA Cup final. It was still full. Brilliant experience.
I want to ask you about two of the key personnel of that team. First of all, Sean O'Driscoll, not currently managing in the EFL. I think Walsall 16-17 season was the last time we saw him at a management level. But if you just look back and read what you can about this Doncaster side, it comes back to Sean O'Driscoll, a style of play that was unusual at the time in its beauty, I guess. How much of an influence was he on you as a player, and now that you're starting your steps in management, how good was he, basically?
I think the biggest compliment we can give him is, at half-time, we had some big clubs, really big clubs. We're walking out for the second half, and some top players in the Championship come out and say, can we not just leave the second half and just give you the 3 points and we can get off home, so we're not chasing shadows for 45 minutes?
So it wasn't because you were physically battering them, it was passing around them?
Yeah, it was just passing around them. And then he carried, when I left, myself and Matt Mills left, and he used the money to buy Billy Sharp, and he got John Oster in, who was a good footballer, and he just continued it. I think he had certain ways, certain system of playing to overload certain areas of the pitch, but he gave players belief. You know, I used to go on the pitch knowing that I don't care who I'm playing against, I'm going to be the best player on this pitch. I'm going to play 1-2s round you. I'm going to run off you. I'm going to play in front of you. And as soon as you engage me, I'm going to play in the spaces that you leave. He was just really good. Richie O'Kelly again was the same. Because Sean, if you speak to Sean or you listen to him, he can be quite dour at times. But one-on-one, he's very engaging. Richie O'Kelly on the run, class always. Half full.
Perfect partnership.
Totally opposite, and he worked brilliantly in tandem together. Yeah.
And what do you think when you see Coppinger still megging people in League One, one of the top assist makers in the league?
It doesn't surprise me. I had a bet 3 or 4 years ago saying I'd play more games than him. I think I've still got more games than him, but he's fit. I mean, again, he's lived his life right all the way through. And condition, you look at him now, he's probably not put an ounce of fat on. But he's a great player. He should have played higher. His ability, maybe his lack of goals stopped him from playing higher, but he should have had. I look at some of the players now who win promotion from the Premier League and go and have little dabbles in the Premier League and here and there. Shocking that he hasn't had a chance in the Premier League, because he technically, I think in 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, he was a very good player.
You got to move to Leicester. Decent transfer fee as well. The first 3 seasons when you were very much first team, it was quite a lively time at the club in terms of the managers you played under. You know, the fact that the first season playoffs, losing the semi-final on pens, and then the 2 seasons after that with quite a lot of chopping and changing going on. The club is sort of 10th, 11th, 12th. How good a team was that in terms of personnel? How different was that move?
I probably played about 5 different teams. So obviously it's a big club. And when I joined, he'd just won promotion from League One. And I had about 4 or 5 other options. And I just thought, you know what? I'd seen it happen before that people use that winning mentality, that feel-good factor, to not just go League One Championship, just go Championship Premier League again. And we had a very rigid team, 4-4-2. Steve Howard up front, Matty Fryett just off him, myself and Andy King in midfield. Strong, experienced back four. Wouldn't really excite you. So totally the opposite to where I'd come from.
Yeah.
But power, game management was very good. You know, and we didn't lose many games. I think we finished 5th. It was 5th in the Championship. Matty Fryett had scored 20 goals from the start of the season to the middle of December. He got injured. If he would have stayed fit, we would have gone up. No doubt about it. We lost his goals. Martin Waghorn come in for and done okay. But Matty was older, the more complete player at the time. And then obviously we got to the playoffs, we lost the playoffs, and then the revolving door, what happened in the next few years.
Yeah, so Nigel Pearson was the manager at the time, and then the next season starts with Paulo Sousa. Yeah. He lasts a month or 2 months maybe. Yeah. And then Sven comes in. This is Sven post post foray at Notts County, post Mexico and Ivory Coast, post Man City, obviously. What was it like playing for him?
I had my best year. I went from being in Ridgewood 4-4-2, where I let Andy King bomb on. He got the goals. And I just try and hold midfield play and get us, start us playing. He gave me freedom. He let me go, a bit like Sean O'Driscoll, let me go and play. As a man manager, he was brilliant. But again, it was just, we had so many players. It was some players upset. The dressing room was a bit discontent at times. It was only really until Nigel returned to the club that he got that, you know, solid foundations and got the dressing room back.
You played for a few other clubs after Leicester, back to Donny.
Yeah.
2.5 years, I think, back at Donny. The first season,
yeah,
you didn't really look like you were going to go down at all. And then a really poor run of form and you go down on final day.
Probably my fault. Because, well, I wouldn't say my fault, but I got injured. We played Leeds away. I hooked a ball just down the channel and someone kicked the bottom of my foot. And I thought, the stud had gone into through my boot and into the bottom of my foot. So I had to kit man to get me other pair of boots. He comes out and I put them on, that was the same. So I took me, I'm just like, something don't feel right. Anyway, won that game 2-1. I came off with about 15 minutes ago and I sat in a dressing room thinking, I've got 7 games left, we've done enough. I thought, I'm not going to play another game. My foot's gone. We lost 5, drew 2 and went down last day of the season on goal difference. So for me to get injured with 7 games to go, and I was in good form, I was playing well, we was a competent team in the Championship, considering it was Paul Dicko's first season, he was doing a good job, and to get relegated on the last day on goal difference in a manner that Birmingham, what happened at Birmingham v Bolton, it destroyed the club for a little bit, because we lost a load of players. Obviously, if you're trying to attract players at a Championship, it's a lot easier than in League One. But yeah, I just always think back, because if I wouldn't have got injured, we were 100% stayed up.
Mm. In the few years after you left Donny, you had a couple of short spells. Is that the point where the transition into coaching and now management was sort of fresh in the mind? You started to have new objectives. How did you sort of want to go about that?
So I realised I was about to finish and Nicky Mellon rang me up at Shrewsbury and said, I'll give you an 18-month deal. I said, Nicky, I'm 36. He went, no, come in, keep us up this year and I'll give you an 18-month deal. I probably should have said, no, Mickey, just give me a... I said, I think I can still offer a dressing room a little bit. My legs have gone, but I can still play. I've still got ability to open teams up and to pass the ball about. Went to Shrewsbury, stayed up. And that summer I was on my B licence in Northern Ireland, taking my B licence. And as I was on my B licence, Mickey rang me up and said, Rich, I'm going 4-4-2. I want my 2 midfield players to up and down, second balls, get crosses in the box, second balls, recycle the ball, get out wide. I said, obviously, you don't have enough energy to do that. I said, Mickey, not a problem. I'll report for pre-season and I'll weigh up my options. I'll see what we do. I stayed another couple of months at the start of the season and Salford came in. Salford allowed me to train Tuesday, train Thursday, play on a Saturday. So I still had the love for the game. I just knew my mind was getting better as a footballer, but my body was deteriorating. So it kept me fit in terms of reasonable shape. But then Monday to Friday, I'd be going out, I'd be coaching kids, I'd be offering universities, I'd be offering soccer schools, foreign kids exchange, just to go in, coach the kids for 2-3 hours for free, because I knew there was no way that I was going to finish football and then go and coach a first team. If I did, I might get shown up, because if I make mistakes, if I show vulnerabilities, if I show weaknesses to first team players, they'll pounce on you. You know, and I'd look a fool. So what I've done is I've made mistakes. I'd get my stutters out, taking the young kids, but they would not, they'd not pounce on me. They'd let me coach, yeah. Let me make mistakes. So I probably had about 6-8 months of that. And then I went to Ireland the year after to do my A licence. Then I was fully qualified to be a coach, to be a manager. And then obviously I think right now I want to get on the ladder. I've started at the bottom. At being a football player, and I've worked my way up to a really good level. Now I'm back at the bottom again in terms of a coaching ladder.
Yeah.
Now I need to work my way back up. So I took a decision to go on. I played a little bit at Macclesfield again, waiting for an opportunity to come up. That was just, a friend of mine, Ollie Norburn, had been injured, and John Askey wanted a replacement midfielder for a couple of months. And I just said, listen, I'll come in as soon as Ollie's fit, then obviously I'm quite happy to step away. And then the opportunity to join John Sheridan at Oldham came up.
And you'd already played under John, hadn't you?
Mm.
Was that at?
That was at Oldham. So John Sheridan and Tommy Wright, two people who've got a lot of time for and they know the game. And good. John's a good manager. He's managed hundreds and hundreds of games and been successful. He's always, if he's gone in a difficult situation, he's always kept teams up. He's been promoted with, I think, Plymouth and Chesterfield. So, you know, I knew that what I'd be watching is the right thing.
What was it like picking up tips and tricks from John Sheridan and watching him? But obviously, as we've seen in your teams that you've managed so far, perhaps in terms of style of play, quite different to John Sheridan and the way that his teams were generally set up. Quite a good thing, maybe, because you get to see a different way. Were there times where you're biting your tongue thinking...
No, it depends what you like. I think John made a decision to play a certain way. We had Aaron Holloway and Craig Davies up front, you know, two big lads. But no, at that time, I wasn't taking many sessions. I was obviously watching and seeing what was going on. But Tommy and John liked to do their sessions themselves, which was, I knew my place, I knew where I stood, and would never, you know, speak out of turn. If they wanted to take the sessions, fine. I'm watching, I'm taking these sessions down, I'm learning. But more often than not, I was joining training every day. He actually came to a point where I was the best player. So he asked me the question, would you consider coming back? But no, I knew I enjoyed training every day, but there was no real intensity to me training. So I knew that had gone. My main goal was watching what John done, watching what Tommy Wright done, seeing certain body language of the players when he done certain stuff. What sessions did we do the week to a good performance? What session did we do to a poor performance? So I think in terms of the couple of months I had, I learned quite quickly. I obviously learned a lot quicker when I got chucked in at the deep end, and then it's sink or swim time.
Yeah, so you took over as caretaker after John left the club's bottom of the league, and then there's a real bounce, isn't there? And that must have been a kind of an amazing first few weeks. You know, your first opportunity as a number one, unbelievable start. What did you put that down to?
We'd just been beat by Rotherham on a Saturday 5-1. We hadn't played 11, we'd lost 10. We won one against Bristol Rovers. We didn't score many goals, so it was actually a relief when we scored. Never mind get 3 points. And the chief exec had pulled me and just said, listen, would you like to take the team on Tuesday? You've got Monday session, that's it. So I just had half an hour on my own. I said, listen, I need to make this session important. I need to make it intense. I need to put my point across quick. And I need to make a few things that make the... Because the players knew my character.
Mm.
They knew it. So I was joining training for them. I was one of the lads. I was a go-between between the manager and the players, but I was always more on the players' side. Whatever the players would say would never get to the manager, and I think the players trusted me. But I needed to make statements that the lads would actually sit back and...
You felt strongly that you didn't have to do that?
Oh, 100%, 100%. So I dropped Gerard, who was one of the main character in the dressing room. Yeah. He hadn't been playing up to scratch. I think he known that. I had a chat with him before the game. But I need to make sure. I told him, I said, you've not been good enough. I'm going to drop you. I said, but if I see any of your body language now, you're disrupting any of the other players. You're trying to drag any other players with you. He says, I'll put you back in because you're a good player. But I need to take you out because you've not been good enough for the previous weeks. And he was great. He understood it. I probably made 4 or 5 changes. We played Peterborough at home, second in the league. Was winning 1-0. Bring one of their lads down for a penalty. We go down to 10 men at 1-1. And then Tony Filliskirk, who was helping me out, he just says, bring Davies off. I said, no. I said, if we draw the game, I ain't getting a job. We need to win it. Keep Doyle, keep Davies on, and we'll go 4-3-2. We'll try and stay really narrow, because Peterborough at the time had really good footballers. He had Mary up front.
Yeah.
Not really a threat from crosses. I was quite comfortable with him putting the ball in the box. I didn't want them to play through us. We went 2-1 up, and I was just about to get a striker on, and we went 3-1 up. So then obviously that was time to shut up shop, and in the end, the referee puts 8 minutes up of injury time. They pull one back, we won 3-2. The Saturday after that, we go down to Portsmouth in front of 20,000 and win 2-1. And then the week after that, we beat Blackburn at home 1-0. Blackburn didn't lose for 25 games after that. So we'd played three teams that are proper teams and done great. And I'd made, as soon as we beat Portsmouth away, I decided that I wanted the job, but made massive errors in the way that I went about it.
Like?
Things like, we beat Portsmouth away and the chairman was about to take over. Can I come in? Can I see the players? I was, yeah, no problem. Come in, see the players. Then we beat Blackburn on the Saturday. Can I come in? Can I see the players? Yeah, come in. Then I beat Crewe in a checkered trade game. I asked him, do I need to win this game to get the job? If I need to win this game, I'll put a strong team out. If I don't need to win the game, then I'll be a little bit more relaxed because the next league game is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, didn't really give me a definitive answer, so I put a strong team out. We win the game, and then I get the job after that. And then I should have drew a line. I should have said, right, this doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. But I never. And it continued to happen where it got to the stage where it was pretty ridiculous in the end. I had meetings with him, but I couldn't change his mindset because he'd seen it and he enjoyed the camaraderie with when you're winning. Then he enjoyed that, but I should have drew a line. And that's, again, that's me learning, because it would never happen now. It would never happen. So
in terms of what people think managers need to be really good at, probably one of the underrated things is, I think, what they call in management speak, managing upwards, isn't it? It's not just what you have to do with the players and staff.
Yeah, at Oldham, I was managing my time 80% upwards, 20% on the field with the players that mattered. It was some of the situations that I was put in, some of the scenarios that I had to deal with were just ridiculous. It was hard. And it was, I think now, if you look at the club, there's probably been over 20 changes of staff. And I was having a daily basis where staff were coming in and saying, I want to leave. I'm not being paid. This hasn't happened. That's not happened. I want to leave. Now, I have to manage them to try and not just convince them to stay, but convince them to stay and be happy and work in a good environment. And it gets to a stage where when you're doing it for 1 and 2 months, you're all right. And it gets to 4th and 5th month, it just drains the energy out of you. The office staff, every staff, trying to keep them happy. And obviously trying to keep the players happy because they weren't being paid as well.
January was your first transfer window, yeah, as a number one. Again, quite a lively transfer window, wasn't it? There was a lot of movement.
Not really for me.
No?
If I'm being honest, no. I had players put on me that I didn't want. Again, wouldn't happen now.
Mm.
But when you put in a certain situation, I thought, it got to the end of January and I thought, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be at this club. The 31st of January at 10 o'clock at midnight, we signed someone who I'd never heard of. And I finally found out about it. Driving to training on the 1st of February, the local radio had said, new signing, such and such, but he's looking forward to making his debut on Saturday. I was like, who the is he?
Mm.
I'd never heard of him. I decided then that I didn't want to be at the club. But I spoke to a few people and just said, listen, you've done a great job. You're gonna stay up. You're gonna stay up. Once you've stayed up and the people that know the problems that you've had to deal with, then you'll get another job. And it's probably that what convinced me to stay as well. As long as being stubborn and actually liking Oldham as a club, wanted me to stay. But it just got more difficult and more difficult, and in the end, couldn't see clearly.
Really?
So I made rational decisions which wasn't for the benefit of the team. It was more stubbornness just to try and bring a bit of control my way.
Too far gone at that point.
It was well too far gone. It was got to the stage where I didn't actually want to see certain people in the club.
Yeah. Even so, I think if you project the points per game that you got over the course of a season, it would have been a comfortable survival story. And I'm looking at the last 9 games, I'm seeing 1 win, 1 defeat and 7 draws. It's like completely on a knife edge.
100%. I think I lost 3 out of the last 16. So we was always in games. I'm a, like you said, my record was mid-table. Okay, you can put relegation on my CV, but I'm proud of keeping a group of players together for as long as I did, because Bury were having problems. Bury were relegated with 6-7 weeks of the season to go. And that's really what should have happened to us.
Mm.
But managed to keep people on side for as long as possible. And it, if it wasn't for a ridiculous decision against Gillingham at home in the 93rd minute for one of my players to punch an opposition player and give a penalty away, then we would have stayed up.
Yeah, that was one of the more remarkable incidents of the EFL season last year. When you left Oldham, you said, this is a quote that I've read, I've learned a great deal from the experience, hope to find a role with a club that matches my ambition, believes in a long-term project to develop players, a club identity and a playing philosophy. So we're meeting here in your office at Swindon Town. You've been here for 3 months or so. How positive are you feeling about the first 3 months here and trying to hit on those things you were looking for when you left Oldham?
One of the biggest selling points was the chairman's a great character, and I got on with him straight away and I really liked him. And I went through different things about the club. The pitch is magnificent. The pitch is brilliant all year round. When at Oldham, I had 3 months of playing brilliant football, and it got to mid-December, late December, the pitch had just gone. You know, Paul Scholes will find it now because he's a brilliant footballer. He want to play football himself. But the pitch dictates the way that you want to play football. So I wanted to go somewhere which wouldn't change my ideas on the way that games should be played. And you can ask for them certain things in a job interview, but this club's been brilliant so far. Everything that I've asked for is running smoothly. The points returned from where we've come from, the games played, has been good. I think we're 17th, someone took over. You take over, you're in a building one day and your first game is a 4-0 defeat at home and the crowd are discontent. You're thinking, you know, in my head, I'll be honest with you, I'm thinking we're in trouble here. And I'm looking down, I'm thinking we could get relegated because the club's a little bit unbalanced, the fans aren't happy. We need to make an impact pretty quickly. And then we won the next three on the bounce. That kind of just turned the tide a little bit. And I think from then, we didn't play great football in them three games, but we got the results. And now the fans are slowly coming. We play a high press. You know, away from home, we're very good on the counter-attack. And we try and play some good football. So it's just about building. If there's no one putting any pressure on me this season to get in the playoffs, from where we've come from, can we build? Can we look to the future? If we don't make the playoffs this year, we've got certain fundamentals, certain foundations that the players have to adhere by, that going on to next season, we can start quickly, quicker than we did this season, that gives us a chance to be in a shout for promotion next year.
Anyone who's watched Swindon under Richie Wellens is hard not to notice, especially relative to League Two. The style of football that you're implementing at the moment, you touched on it there, high press, very patient in possession. How easy is that to implement? How do you go about that? I mean, when you come in the middle of a season, do you find it easy to say, this is how I'm going to play and to get that message across?
I think you've got to get the balance right, because when a new manager comes in, there's players that are going to think, does this manager fancy me? There's going to be players that you pick straight away that you like, and there's going to be players that you don't pick straight away that you need to watch, you need to manage them. The ones who you're picking, they're fine because they're playing. But you're going to need these players because I've seen them loads on DVDs, loads of games, but I haven't worked them day in, day out. I haven't seen a character. I haven't seen what happens when they go 1-0 down after 5 minutes. Are they hiding? Did he show for the ball? Do they still want it? So it's just about one thing I've not done. We still need to improve about in our patience, but then quicken it up at the right time. And we need to improve that. But I've not asked them to do anything that they're not capable of doing.
Watching some clips of the last few games, I was watching basically the chances you created against Grimsby in the last game, and there are times that you can hear one or two people in the stands shouting, get it forward, when it's being worked around the back four and trying to probe. And Grimsby were sitting in and difficult to get through. But if you were to sit down with the fan who's shouting, get it forward, and just have a minute to say, this is what I'm trying to do and justify it.
Sometimes that's an English mentality. So if I'm a centre-back in the opposing team and we're playing a 5-4-1, if you keep putting that ball into my head, I'm happy. Straight balls, I'm never having to move. I'm not getting tired because I'm staying in the same zone all the time. Same with the full-backs. If you're playing against that and you keep working them side to side and you keep having to get leg work, there's a reason why Man United scored so many goals when Sir Alex Ferguson. It's because they don't change the way they play. They keep doing the right things. They keep working getting it wide, then to the opposite side. Can you play through? You know, keep getting it wide, keep doing the right things. All of a sudden, people get tired, people switch off, and then the opportunity comes to play that slide pass where someone gets some one-on-one, or to get the crossing behind the centre-back because he hasn't recovered into his position properly. Our goal against Grimsby was, I think we've made 15, 16 passes, and then they retreat into an area where my centre-back is stepping out into it. He can put a good ball in, and then my striker scores. So, let's say if there's 5 minutes of the game left, you get it forward. You've just got to, you should see how it is. But again, we haven't got a 6'4" centre-forward. We haven't got a big target man, so we've got to work into areas where our strikers can be effective. If I've got a 6'5" centre-forward, if I've got a Peter Crouch, then put the ball in. Put the ball in. But it's about what personnel you've got.
Yeah, you've got some really technical players, players that can play the short passing style, can beat a man. The perception is, I think, that often a team that plays like that, I'm not talking about Swindon specifically, but teams that play this sort of very attractive style can be a little frail defensively, concede soft goals or struggle a bit against a really direct side or a bit vulnerable on the counter-attack if they've overcommitted. How do you try and make sure that's not going to be the case with this side?
I think if you look at the teams at every single level, if they nail it by playing the right way, they can go on again. So when they do get promoted, Bournemouth are a great example. Played against Bournemouth in coming towards the end, League One. We got beat 4-0. I'm thinking, I've just been given a run around. To enter into the Championship and done it to every single... Then going to the Premier League and do it to a Premier League and you're still talking 7-8, same personnel. So Eddie Howe realised what he wanted to do, stuck by it, but it's about getting... If you've got all the ball, yeah, and then they put it in your box and you can't defend because your centre-half isn't strong enough, get another centre-half in. Coach him. Give him the opportunity to turn it around. Give him all the information that he needs. But if he's not doing, you need to change it. So I always believe you look at League Two this year. Lincoln are a big physical team, defend both boxes very well. When you look at the three or four teams below that, MK Dons play very good football. Berry play very good football. Forest Green play very good football. For me, it's there in black and white.
Yep.
The best football team in the Premier League. Liverpool and Man City, I know they've got the most money. And then you look at Wolves in the Championship last year.
Yep.
Great example. Expansive, play brilliant football. It's difficult for the opposition to work out at times. They go into the Premier League and they just took on to another level.
So it comes back to you talking about implementing a philosophy, not just for this season.
And sticking by it. The easiest thing for a manager to say, replay. But then when his team comes under a little bit of pressure, get it forward. Well, that's just totally... You're contradicting yourself, you're confusing your players. And that's not a good thing. I think if you're a team that goes long and you get success by it, it'll take you only a certain way.
Yeah.
You're waiting week in, week out. When that ball goes up to that striker and you're looking for second balls, does it land for you? Yeah, it does. You win the game. Next week, doesn't land for you. The week after, it doesn't land for you. You always rely on a little bit of luck. I think when you're a team like Wolves and Bournemouth, as I've said, you're in control of your own destiny because you've got possession of the ball. And you're trying to create your own openings.
How much do you react to or consider and then react to the opposition that you're coming up against in terms of shape, style, tactics? Yeah, because even in League Two, more teams than ever playing three at the back. Yeah. Still some old school type teams. It's a bit of everything. So, with games coming thick and fast, it must kind of be quite tough sometimes.
But that's changed a little bit because when I'm manager of Oldham in League One, I look at every single squad I'm playing. Blackburn and playing Wigan, big budget, some really good players. And every single week, my squad, my team, is inferior to the opposition. So I've got a group of players that aren't as good as the opposition. So if I'm open and I try and match them and just concentrate on my team only, we'll get cut to shreds. We'll lose most weeks. What you've got to do is you've got to try and have your, this is what we want to do. But out of possession, we have to give certain teams a mark of respect. Because you're older in League One, you've got the lowest budget. You've got now it's a little bit different. We've got some good players. So against certain teams, I don't even concentrate on the opposition. We try and affect our game.
Managed to press MK Dons pretty well the other day.
But that's a certain team that you play against. Again, we don't change the way that we're going to play. It's just that we knew they don't really go long, so there's no threat in behind. So we can step 10 yards. The space in between the midfield and the back four has to be small because they've got players that wanting to come into pockets. But then when you get the ball in the back, leave the two centre backs on it. Don't press them. As soon as they play a press into midfield, or a ball into midfield, or a ball to the full back, that's the trigger that we're going to press, and we try and get the next pass and nick it as high up as possible, because we've got quick players. And if we do win the ball back high up, they ain't going to catch us. Lincoln, for example, totally opposite. You know that ball is going into your box. You can't commit fouls. Against MK Dons, you can commit fouls, you can break the game up, because you know it's hand on play and they play in front of you again. You commit fouls against Lincoln, the ball's going in your box. You let Akinde, you let Boswick, you let Shackle, three or four others go in your box, he dies him his death. So you have totally different week in, week out, but that's, for Swindon in this league, we try and get our game more often than not across to the opposition. So at Oldham, where I'm probably thinking I'm working 60-70% on the opposition, and only that it's probably 80% on us and 20% on whatever the opposition may be.
I mentioned the MK Dons game there. Michael Doughty scored a little dink penalty. Yeah. I was watching some Leicester fans put a compilation, a short compilation of you playing for Leicester on YouTube. It's set to Coldplay or something. It's as if you've passed away. And one of the things in it, little dinked penalty for Leicester against Borough, I think it was. Have you said that to Doughty?
Mine wasn't as dinked as his. Well, his was really
cheeky,
really dinked. I actually didn't see it. I went to the toilet. He was 2-1 up. I went to the toilet and didn't hear anything. So I thought we must have scored. And then we come back out. Obviously, I'd seen we scored. Didn't have no idea how we scored it. Doughty's got a brilliant left foot. He's a player that has played higher and can play higher again. We're missing him, unfortunately, at the moment for injury. But, yeah, wonderful left foot. And, listen, I don't want to stop players from expressing themselves. But if you miss that penalty, you leave yourself open, don't you? So, listen, he didn't. He scored. But as long as he puts the ball in the net, I'm not really bothered how it goes in.
Danny Hilton's been doing it over the last few years. Now, his next two, he'll stick hard and low, maybe. And then, by that time, he can do another one.
Yeah, I remember Liam Lawrence in the playoff final. Chips it down the middle. He goes over the bar. He misses. Mansfield don't go up. I can't remember who he played. They go up. Liam Lawrence leaves and goes to Sunderland. Now, his legacy at Mansfield, he done brilliant for him. But it's a bit... If he does it... You know, Jan Kermigan at Leicester is a good example. He's gone on to have a great career at pre-Leicester, but he never recovered from that.
You mentioned results. It's been a good start at Swindon since you've been in charge. On the podcast, we sometimes look at the underlying performance data that we can get our hands on, things like expected goals and other such metrics. I wondered, is that something that you keep abreast of, want to know about, get told about, but don't want to know? Because in terms of the last 2 months or so, you've probably been told by your analyst or someone, Swindon projecting pretty much one of the best 3-4 teams in the league. So
it could have been 16 games. Yeah. Look at that. I'm getting a headache talking about it. So sometimes stats are great, but they can be a bit mind-boggling at times. I mean, how can't we get this? I mean, what's this one here? There you go. Distance run. So players can get hit up by a... I didn't run that fast. So I don't want my holding midfield player running.
Yeah.
I want him to be in the right position. My full-backs, then I want them to be running a lot because they need to get up and down all game. I honestly believe that you can do all the stats you want. You know, only certain things can be really helpful. But your best stat is your eye. How did you see that game? How do you feel it went? More often than not, what you see at the time is true. Sometimes when you go back and watch a video, it can trigger you. I didn't actually see it that way. It was a little bit different to what I've seen it. But if you just concentrate on only stats, it's not a stat sport.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a basketball. It's not an NFL game where it's stats. This is what you're going to do. And if he does this, you win the game. Stats, you can have 80% of the ball in football. You can get beat 4-0.
Lastly, this summer, all being well, you'll have your first summer transfer window as a manager. So you had January with Oldham last season, you've had January with Swindon, and everyone knows that the January transfer window compared to the summer transfer window, different beasts, right? Yeah. So looking forward to that. How do you think your ideas about recruitment and how you're going to find the right players, what's the plan really? How are you going to go about it?
We're planning now. We've got certain criteria, what we want from certain players in each position. So we're getting out watching games, watching players. We're aware of most players that are out of contract, under 23 players that will be made available on loan. And that's a difficult as a manager. Both times I've had two managers' jobs, and both times that I've gone in, players run on the floor, confidence-wise. You're having to pick them up. You've not had that pre-season to get you. This is a system that we want to play. This is our go-to system that we want to play every week. But if it's not working, we're going to go to this system. If not, we're going to go to this system. And you're out in the sunshine. You might be in a foreign country. The players have got the vests on because they like the tans on their arms. But they're happy to stand around, listen to information, take it on board for 2-3 hours. When you get a job in November, you can't have them standing around. They're cold. The attention levels aren't there. They'll listen to you for 30 seconds before the body tell them, I'm cold, I need to get going. So it's a big. It's going to be a big pre-season. We'll 8-9 weeks in terms of the fitness levels. Obviously, it's a gimmick, but that's the easy bit. It's about getting information about how we want to play, what we want to do. And then the recruitment side of it, we've got a lot of players who are out of contract, so we've got to make decisions on them. I don't want to be bringing mass amounts in, and I want to try and get all the players that we do bring in available for beginning of June, so they're all together from the very start. They can have a couple of bonding sessions. They can go to pre-season together. I don't want to be getting to the August transfer window where you've played five, you've not got your team. Last day of the window, you bring in 3-4 players and you change the team 6 times in August and you're 6 points from where you want to be. You want to try and get your business done early, get the players that you want in. And we're obviously out there now identifying players and try and get players in so we can attract them. The biggest thing for me is finding out what the characters are like. We obviously, again, I spoke about before, you see these players playing for opposition, you think he's a good player, he can do this, he produces that. But what are they like between the ears? What drives them forward? What are their ambitions? Are they hungry? Are they happy to just play in level League 2 all their career? Did they want to go and earn some more money for the family? Have they got kids? Are they settled? Are they a young 21-year-old who's got his head on his shoulders, or is he a loose cannon? That's what you want to try and do.
So how do you try and build the best picture of a player like that?
Get a mixture of everyone. Listen, I like lads that are quite loose, but you can only have a couple of them. They've got to be talented. They've got to produce on the pitch. Because at League 2 you're not going to get the complete footballer. You're not going to get someone who's brilliant technically, has got good pace, can see a pass, everything, but then off the pitch he's a model professional. He eats well, he doesn't drink, he does this, he does that. You ain't going to. So sometimes you might have to go, he's a rough diamond, he's got problems, but we'll work with him, we'll try and improve that. But on the pitch he's a good player, and that's what you've got to try and. But you can only have one or two. Then you need solid people, solid professionals to do the job around them.
You sound very excited about it all, to be honest.
No, I'm excited now. It's a good club. It's a club that's waiting to take off. And I felt that in the last probably 6 weeks. The atmosphere is coming back to the ground. People are actually looking forward to coming to the ground and seeing us win. There's been a bit of a stigma for the last 2 or 3 years about Swindon playing at home. They haven't won many games. Since we've been here, it's the first time that they've won 3 on the bounce for a long time. So we're just slowly turning it around. It never happens straight away. You'll hear that saying so many times, but it's true in football. The only way that you can produce results is be given time, and then you change the feeling of a club. I can go to a club in the middle of April, and if I didn't know where the two teams are playing, I'll turn up at the ground, and I won't know where they are in the league table, and I'll go, these are going down, these are struggling. And if you go to a promotion chasing, you'll go, these are going up, these. You can feel it in the ground. I've played at so many opposition grounds when, and I've obviously been involved in, and you come out for the warm-up, you go, we're going to win today. We're going up. You can feel it. And that's the only way that you get success. Create that feel-good factor, create an atmosphere that when players and supporters come into the ground, it's an environment that they want to do well in.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thanks. Enjoyed it.